Yesterday, in a unanimous ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that naturally occurring genes cannot be patented. The ruling will affect researchers, universities, and industry. Jennifer Carter Johnson's an assistant professor of law at Michigan State University. She also holds a Ph.D. in microbiology, and using her background in law and in biology, she provides some insight for us on the Supreme Court's ruling. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Let's start at the very beginning and revisit what it means for a company to have a patent on something. What does having a patent empower a company to do?
Well, a company that has a patent on an invention has the right to exclude everybody else in the country from practicing that invention. In effect, they have a monopoly on practicing, in this case, a gene patent, a gene.
And if somebody invents a tool, for example, a new screwdriver that goes on sale at Sears, and Sears doesn't hold the patent holder at least gets some kind of royalty? Does it work like that?
They would, yes. So in that sort of case, Sears would either have to license the right to make the screwdriver from the patent holder.
Gotcha.
Or they would get it sold by the patent holder to them and then sell it on.
Well, this gets very 21st century here with the Supreme Court's ruling. A little more background. When was it determined that genes were patentable?
Well, so that's actually the interesting thing. It's been assumed that genes were patentable since about the 1980s when the Supreme Court had, in a case called Diamond versus Chakrabarty, said anything under the sun created by man, which opened the door to patenting living things generally. And people assumed then that genes were patentable, but it's never been tested until this Supreme Court case.
It took 30 years for that to come around.
It did.
Give us some background on this dispute that was settled yesterday, the Association for Molecular Pathology versus Myriad Genetics. How did this whole thing come to a head?
So this is another case that has been a long time in the making. The patent at issue is for the BRCA1 and 2 genes that are implicated in breast and ovarian cancer. So if you have these mutations in these genes, you're 80% likely, there's an 80% likelihood that you will have developed breast cancer or ovarian cancer. And so women have been looking for screening methods so that they can assess their risk and determine the pathway that they want to take. Myriad Genetic, holding the patents to the genes and the diagnostic tests, have been the sole provider of the diagnostics because no one else could, because of this monopoly, patent monopoly, be able to provide the test. And because of that, they've been charging very high prices. A lot of researchers across the country have wanted to get into this process of doing these tests for women, and they've been excluded from doing that.
I see. And it, the heart of the ruling, now the BRCA is a naturally occurring human gene then?
It is,
and
yes.
That was at the heart of the ruling, as I understand
yes.
it. Since it was naturally occurring, then they had no right to patent that.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, what was the case? How did the Association for Molecular Pathology defend it? Was it just on the grounds of precedent that it had always been okay to do this?
In part, they said that there was a lot of reliance by the biotech industry because the biotechnology industry has grown up on these gene patents.
Right.
But they've also made the argument that by taking the gene out of its natural context in the human cell, the isolation step itself, was enough human input to make it now not just naturally occurring, but also man-made.
We're talking with Jennifer Carter Johnson, who's an assistant professor of law here at Michigan State University, about the impacts of the Supreme Court ruling yesterday on whether genes are patentable or not. Now, how does this ruling impact the availability of the testing that women might, will that free up, will it make it a lot easier for women to be tested for this, for the BRCA, have their BRCA genes analyzed?
It should. It looks like it will at this point. There are already laboratories out there that are indicating that as soon as the Supreme Court case came down, that they would be looking to offer this test. So it looks like it'll be both easier to find, there'll be more companies out there, which should bring the price down.
And there's no higher court to appeal to.
No.
So this would seem to settle the matter once and for all. I know your background's in law and biology, not Supreme Court watching, but does the unanimous decision mean anything that you know of?
I think
9-0.
You know, we talk a lot about the split decisions and the court being very polarized. But in honesty, a lot of decisions are come down in
really?
A unanimous manner. They just happen to be decisions that, for the most part,
don't get a lot of
press
publicity.
Attention. This is one that does. But I think it's a strong message from the Supreme Court to the lower courts to say, you know, don't push too far with patents because there is a public interest.
How do you see this case shaping just larger scientific research in the future?
I think it's going to have a lot of different impacts at a lot of different levels. At a basic research level, it's going to free up the ability of researchers across the board now to do research on these genes. Because they're not going to be
monopolized yeah.
by individual companies. At the same time, the biotech industry is going to have to reorganize a little bit. I don't think it's going to be catastrophic for them. One thing to point out is this case does not say that the application of these genes are unpatentable. Those are still patentable. Synthetically made DNA is still patentable.
Because it's
man-made.
Gotcha.
So the case is not biotech is not patentable. The case is actually fairly narrow. The genes as they exist in the chromosomes in our body, if you just purify those, not patentable. That leaves a lot of room for the tech industry to keep innovating.
You can only wonder where we're headed with this. You know,
the future is bright.
Okay. Will this at all change the role that universities play in research? You're suggesting then that this could be a catalyst for more research.
I think so. And I think the universities, especially government grant driven universities, we're in an era where government grants, federal funding of scientific research is much debated, and this is actually a great opportunity for those types of research projects now to go forward without having to worry about companies coming in and trying to sue researchers mm-hmm. for patent infringement. So I think it relieves a lot of pressure, outside pressure, as far as that goes. But I think it makes more important these basic research.
Tell us
programs.
A little bit about what's called cDNA. What is cDNA, and how is that impacted by this decision?
So cDNA is one of those forms of synthetic DNA that I mentioned before.
Okay.
that has not been deemed unpatentable.
Gotcha.
cDNA is complementary DNA. And very basically, if you look at the DNA sequence as it exists in your body, it's got a lot of junk in it. And so in order for the DNA to do its job, the body actually takes out extraneous bits of information and makes it one concise piece. And so through use of cellular machinery as well as laboratory machinery, scientists are able to make this complementary DNA, which looks a lot like our cellular DNA, but it's much more concise, and it just has the important bits in it.
Okay, and it's those again, those cDNA. Anything that falls under the category of cDNA would remain patentable.
Remains patentable.
By the decision as of yesterday.
Yes.
I'm curious, do you happen to know Angelina Jolie, the actress's double mastectomy recently apparently came after testing like this. Was it the BRCA 1 and 2 genes that she had analyzed?
I believe
it
was.
To determine that? Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, do you see... tell me how somebody gets involved in biology and the law. That is fascinating to me.
I spent a good number of years as a research scientist at the University of Virginia, where I got my PhD, and I love science. But when it came time to thinking about a career, I was much more interested in the impact of science on society than I was spending my life looking at one protein, at one cell, at one stage of development. There are a lot of people that do it, and there's a lot of value to it, but I was much more interested in the broader picture.
I'm real curious. What do you make of the emphasis today on STEM education, science, technology, engineering, math, as somebody who is a scientist?
I think it is one of the single most important things that we can be doing in the U.S. today. Our future is going to be based on what we can do in those areas.
Okay. Jennifer Carter Johnson is an assistant professor of law at Michigan State University. She holds a PhD in microbiology. Jennifer Carter Johnson, thanks for helping us understand the Supreme Court ruling.
Thank you for having me.